Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Afternoon Satsang. Today, we are on eve of a benchmark, if we can say so, because today will be possibly the last episode of this series on Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Well, it has been a very, very eventful journey so far. A journey that began in the March of 2013, when Prem and myself, with gratitude to Swami in our hearts, decided that, you know, we should take up the life story of Swami, because Swami's life story is his message. My life is my message, he says, and we felt that there would be no better way to learn his message, relive his message, than to relive his own life story. With that objective in mind, with that objective at our heart, 22 to 24 episodes before, I mean, we have been doing it for 2 episodes every alternate fortnight, so today will be possibly the 22nd or the 24th episode. So for the past 1 year, we have enjoyed this beautiful nectarine story of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba from 1926 till 1950, when the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir was formally inaugurated. We still have a few more stories related to the inauguration of the Mandir. And after 1950, Swami's mission, if we can say so, just went explosive. It went ballistic. And that is one of the reasons why Prem and me seek a break from this series, for we have to go back to our books, go back to our research, study a lot, delve in a lot deeper, in order to come up with a comprehensive biography from 1950 onwards. Welcome Prem. Sairam, I took away a lot of introductory time, but I'm sure you concur with what I say.
Absolutely. I think in a sense our inability to do what we were doing so far and continue it after Swami's 1950, Swami's life after that 1950, shows the amount of things Swami did and the number of things in which Swami, you know, gave his time and invested his time, and the number of things, because one of the landmark things, as we would go through Swami's life, we'll know in the 1950s, in the late 1950s, the General Hospital came to be. And that was one of the major events which happened. Then in the 60s, you have Swami traveling for the first time to the northern parts of India very extensively. The Badrinath trip comes, the Swami traveling to Delhi and all those places.
Even to Africa, I think.
Even to Africa comes a little later.
1968.
Right, 68. So the number of things which were happening, and Swami was traveling, Swami's name was traveling, Swami's glory was traveling. So it would definitely be very difficult to say that this is the course, to show a linear direction and say this is Swami's life. It becomes absolutely impossible.
Yeah, and also it so happens that after the 1950s, even if we see Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, the way it has been recorded as a series of episodes in the lives of different devotees. Because we can see very clearly that Swami's life became the life of his devotees. It's almost like that. Because there is so much. I mean, if we take up the perspective of one devotee, we can see Swami's life from 1950s. You take up the perspective of another devotee, another thing opens up. So it's almost as if we'll have to read the accounts or go through, hear the accounts of so many devotees, because there was an explosion after 1950, after Prashanti Nilayam came up, and there are so many stories to be traced and then put into a timeline before we are able to go linearly. And so it is surely our inability, because the story only gets magnificent and magnificent and more magnificent, because that's how the Lord's glory always goes.
In fact, somebody was sharing with me a couple of days back, maybe a couple of weeks back, that it seems Professor Kasturi went up to Swami and once asked, you know, Swami gives that split of 16, 16, 16 years.
Correct.
So according to that, you know, he was asking, I think sometime in the 70s, he went up to Swami, Swami, what next? Apparently he had exhausted all those 16 years.
16 years of 32.
Right. So he was saying, Swami, now what? Like, what is the phase now? And it seems Swami looked at the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir that time, and he said, look at it now. Because if you look at what Prashanti Nilayam looked like in the 1950s when it was inaugurated, it was like a huge bungalow.
Correct.
You know, I remember as a child in the city I grew up in, there were many bungalows like this. Because it was typically a huge mansion kind of a building.
And as we discussed in one of our Satyam Shyam Sundaram satsangs, this was modeled along one of the theaters in Bangalore.
In Bangalore, right?
Yes, so Shivaji Theater.
Right.
So, and if you see Shivaji Theater also, it looks like a big bungalow. And so naturally, Prashant Nilayam also was a big bungalow, a big house, a big residence.
Right. But, you know, with the years, there were so many modifications which came on the mandir. Arches were being made, domes were being put up. There was so many ornamentation which was added, sculptures were added to the building. So when Swami was pointing out to Prashanthi Nilayam, it was not Prashanthi Nilayam the building, it was Prashanthi Nilayam the mandir.
The temple.
The temple. Swami said, see, this is what, it has already happened.
Wow.
Swami said, it is not a mission anymore. It is not just somebody going out to accomplish something. Swami said, I have become a deity in each devotee's heart. So Swami said that this is what it was meant to be. This is what I have come to accomplish. So this was what was happening after 1950. It was a blast. It was an explosion. And it was, as an explosion always is, it happens in so many directions. So to give a linear narrative is so difficult.
And you know, in the early years, say that is from 1926 to 1950, 25 years of Swami's life, we have reached the Silver Jubilee birthday. The 25 years that we have covered, in that, you know, more than half of that time, say till Swami was 14, 15, 16, you know, more than half of the time, Swami was not yet a Godhead. You know, nobody recognized Swami. Swami was treated like anybody else. You know, Swami was just there. And therefore, you know, there are no accounts or narratives of different people feeling different things with him or what they experienced. It is just the story of Satyanarayana Raju. After that, there were only a few who had the courage, who had the bravery to venture and, you know, follow Swami. Follow Swami as their personal deity, as their Lord, as their master. It requires great courage when the whole world appears to be opposing you. And so, we had so few people who had come and their narratives. And with those few narratives and the story of Satyanarayana Raju itself, we have been able to fill, you know, 24 satsang sessions with Swami's story. So that gives an idea of what will happen once we cross 1950 and we have the number of people in the audience being upgraded from hundreds to thousands and later on soon to lakhs also. It becomes simply impossible to get a perfectly linear flow. Even if you want to get an approximate flow, it requires great research.
And interestingly, you know, after the 1960s, the number of people who came to know of Swami but did not visit him physically, even that number was increasing.
Yes.
And Swami would not allow them and their lives to be ordinary just because they have not physically seen Swami.
Correct. You know, in the early part of Swami's life, it was as if the world is coming to Swami. After that, it was Swami going out to the world, going out and, I mean, his influence was not restricted to India alone. People have seen him in exactly the opposite part of the globe as well.
Right. So it becomes very difficult to explain Swami's life by just saying what happened around him, because that is not Swami's story alone. And I think that is what we've been doing in the other satsangs which we've done. You know, we've not called it Satyam Shyam Sundaram, but everything is essentially the story of Swami, because that is what we worship him for. It's not just what he did physically, but what he did otherwise too.
You know, talking about walking Swami's path, you know, living one's life for Swami, I was just reminded of this little dream. You know, one of my classmates, he just called me today morning and he narrated it to me. It felt so wonderful, felt so happy, so nice, and I just thought it was relevant here, so I'll share it. You know, we say that people who came in those days, it was tough for them to, you know, follow Swami, because who is this young Baba whose picture you're keeping at home and everybody derides you, criticizes you, mocks at you, and yet you need great courage to say, no, he's our God, he's our master. Though it is definitely agreed that it was a very tough situation then, I feel, you know, there is some solace in walking the path of the master, walking the path for the master. You know, in this dream, that was the message that Swami, I felt, conveyed, which was not understood in the dream. On waking up, you realize the meaning of Swami's words. That's what always happens to us in life, right? Most of the time we are sleeping when Swami delivers the message, and it is when we, you know, in quotes, wake up right, that we realize the import of the message. So in this dream, this classmate of mine, he said that he saw me in a hospital, and I had my leg fractured and it was raised on a sling, you know, the way they raise it at 45 degrees and it's tied, and so I am lying down there, and he says that Swami had come to the hospital to visit me. So I was very interested because, you know, in the past I've had 2-3 people have dreams about me which have a lot of personal significance in my life. So I always give a lot of importance to Swami's dreams and write them down. And this boy told me when Swami came close, Swami asked me what happened. And I tell him, Swami, I was walking to you and this happened. You know, so in the dream it is as if like I'm rushing to go to Swami and maybe I fell and had this or whatever. And then Swami makes this casual statement so easily, so casually, that is why nobody in the dream actually realizes the significance. And Swami says, with a smile, you know, he turns around and there are so many students sitting there, and he says to the students, you know, he's saying that he was walking and he fell and this happened. And Swami laughs, everybody laughs. And then he says, Swami turned to me and said, you don't worry. If you're walking for Swami, this will never happen to you. And I felt that is such a powerful message, such a strong message. And I feel that this is what the devotees of yore, devotees in those times, in the early, that is 40s and early 50s, late 40s and early 50s, this is what they would have also experienced in their heart. That the whole world may be against us, whole world may criticize us, but when we are walking for Swami, when we are leading our life with Swami, that can never, I mean, we can never falter and fall and break ourselves. I mean, that courage and confidence was instilled in each one of those devotees by their own personal experiences with Swami. And I feel, though there is, we give credit to those great, to those devotees for having held on steadfastly to Swami, we must also express our gratitude to Swami, because He is the one who gives the courage, He is the one who gives the strength, He is the one who gives the assurance that you walk my path, I will ensure that nothing happens to you.
A statement which Swami would often say, and quoted by many of the old devotees, Swami would say, don't try to understand me. You know, anubhavinchu, anandinchu. That's what Swami would say. Experience me and be happy. You know, in the sense, one of the reasons why I felt it was wonderful to go back to Swami's life and see is, we are very skeptical about accepting anybody as an ideal. You know, we would often say that, you know, you have not gone through life which I have gone through. You have not been through the difficulties I have seen. Now, it's very easy for you to philosophize.
Correct.
Philosophize, and that kind of an attitude is very easy to get. But I think even as a person, we should see Swami's life and see that whatever difficulties each human being goes through, He has gone through much more than that. You know, to build one mandir, the amount of difficulties which were there. To even go to a school, to go to a fair, you've spoken about that. In everything which Swami endeavored to do, Swami said that difficulties are part of the plan, even if it was a plan for Himself. And I think that is important for us as a message, because we would sit and think that why should we go back and see Swami's life? Message is the most important thing, because Swami's message is as much in His life as in His words.
Exactly.
And that is what we've learned in seeing Swami's life.
And you know, his life inspired apparently so many people even in those early days. For example, coming back to the story of Satyam Shyam Sundaram, during the 25th birthday celebrations, that is when the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir was inaugurated, you know, there were several musical programs and concerts being given here by some of the very, very well-known people of those times. And you know, one of them was the wife of one Gubbi Veeranna. You know, she was called Gana Visharade Jayamma. Gana Visharade is a title, you know, given to Sharada is the name of goddess Saraswati.
Right.
That is the goddess of learning. So Gana Visharade is an equivalent to being the goddess of learning in music. And this Jayamma, she was the wife, as I said, of Gubbi Veeranna. You know, all you need to do is just go and search on the internet for Gubbi Veeranna, go to Wikipedia. Gubbi Veeranna is one of the icons in Karnataka. It is said that the story of Karnataka theatre and Karnataka movie industry is nothing but the story of Gubbi Veeranna's drama troupe. Okay. He started a drama troupe, and when nothing as such existed in the state of Karnataka, it's another linguistic state region in India, and two of the greatest stalwarts of the Kannada movie industry, one of which is Dr. Rajkumar, and today his sons are in the movies. Dr. Rajkumar is revered almost like a saint by people in Karnataka because of the kind of movies that he has made, you know, mythological movies on Lord Krishna, Lord Rama and all that. He was actually a protege of this Gubbi Veeranna. Mm-hmm. And such an iconic figure this Gubbi Veeranna is. And even in 1950, his wife was one of the prominent singers during the inauguration of the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir. I mean, it is so amazing and it is so inspiring because it shows the power of nobility, divinity and goodness. There is no limit, no boundary to the power of attraction of goodness, nobility and, you know, that is why always throughout his life we see later on, Swami never emphasized on advertising. Swami never emphasized on, you know, publicly announcing things because he knew the truth. He knows the truth. And that is what he wanted to communicate to us, that we just have to be. When we be, it is enough. Others will automatically see and imbibe and get inspired. That is another powerful message that we get seeing the impressive guest list for the birthday celebrations in 1950.
Right, even we read about that. Another important thing which happened during this festivity, which was a 10-day long festivity, typically like how we have 80th birthday celebrations, 75th birthday celebrations, we have many artists coming and performing. And I remember somebody was telling, you know, I think it was during the 70th birthday or one of those big events when one of the greatest singers this country has seen, M.S. Subbulakshmi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she went up to Swami and she requested and begged Swami, Swami, please give me a chance to sing.
She's a Bharat Ratna.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Swami told her, no, see, the schedule has been fixed and, you know, there's no place, there is no slot. Because understandably, these are schedules which are fixed many, many months before. And apparently, I think she would have become free during birthday celebration and she would have died for the opportunity of coming and singing in front of Swami. And Swami said, see, everything is booked, there is no place. She said, Swami, one song. In between two singers, even one song is enough. I mean, imagine the icon of Carnatic vocal singing. She is referred to as Saraswati by some of the, you know, artists who are performing now. She coming and begging Swami.
Goddess Saraswati.
Yes, Goddess Saraswati.
Mm.
And she coming and pleading with Swami. You know, that was how valuable a chance to sing in front of Swami was. And it was so even in 1950, as you're saying, somebody like Gubbi Veeranna, and we spoke about Ram Lakshman, the brothers who were very famous then. In fact, I think Ram Lakshman's niece's wedding was performed during this time, isn't it? There
exactly.
Was one more event which happened.
That's what. That was a great blessing for, I think her name was Damila.
Okay.
And Damila, she was the niece of Raman and Lakshmanan, B.V. Raman, B.V. Lakshmanan. And Swami blessed her saying that he would perform the wedding. And it was such a great honor because it was the inauguration of Prashanthi Nilayam. It was Swami's 25th birthday and also her wedding. In fact, Swami himself materialized a Mangal Sutra and huge crowds had gathered in Prashanthi Nilayam. You know, apart from Gana Visharade Jayamma that we spoke about, there was a Nadaswaram concert by the Karukurichi Arunachalam brothers. You know, so for whom, you know, Swami materialized rings and chains. So a lot of this was happening, and amidst all this, to get the greatest honor of Swami performing the wedding. And you know, when Swami performs the wedding, it was such a spectacle. You know, often in the weddings, the main ceremonies are done by a very elder in the family.
Right.
And the priest. Now here is Swami, who at times was younger than the people getting married. That was the case when Kasturi's daughter got married to, we discussed that.
Right.
So Swami was so young, and yet his presence was so commanding. Because, you know, Swami is Adi Ananta. He is ageless. He is eternal. And in those times, that eternal nature of Swami would be seen, where his mere presence would surcharge the whole atmosphere. And forget an important Vedic Pandit or a priest. People would get the feeling that, you know, the Supreme Lord has descended for the wedding. And it was not as if there was a lot of grandeur. There was a lot of wealth, there was a lot of splurging that used to go on. No, nothing. only Swami's presence. And Swami's presence would make everyone feel as if they were witnessing possibly a Sita Rama Kalyanam in heaven. That was the kind of effect Swami's presence had, and that continues even to this day. There's something magical about Swami's presence. Now, during this wedding, the Mangal Sutra, you know, that is the main thread that is tied around the neck of the bride in order to symbolize her union with the husband. It has a thread, and because Swami had materialized it, every Tom, Dick and Harry, you know, every Ramanna, Shamanna, Gopanna, if you can say so in Indian parlance, he wanted to come and touch that Mangal Sutra and put it to the eye, and it's something very sacred and held in great sanctity. And that evening, the Mangal Sutra thread is missing. It is just vanished. And everybody is so upset and worried. And that is the times when Swami comes and, you know, he discourses them on the importance of preserving the sanctity of the Mangal Sutra. It is so holy and so sacred. And he says, that's it, you know, face the consequence. This is what you did, so it is gone. Unlike in most of the cases where he rematerializes it and, you know, gives it, he doesn't do it this time. But still the golden pendant, which is part of the Mangal Sutra, is still safe there, and that is what is tied around the neck of the knees of Raman and Lakshmanan. And that is how that wedding also got conducted during the 25th birthday celebrations.
And talking about the marriage ceremony, I think one of the ceremonies which Swami is very fond of, for very good reasons, is the Sitaram Kalyanam. And I don't know how many times I've heard Swami himself narrate that incident of how Sita and Rama get married. And that was the reason why there was one particular devotee in that gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Saraswati Bai from Madras. And she was actually renowned for doing that Harikatha of Sitaram Kalyanam. Like, you know, you have that...
The musical rendering
of the whole thing, where they would sing verses from the original Ramayana, they would sing some songs related to that event, and then describe the whole event. It's a very elaborate thing, and we've seen it being performed many times in front of Swami, and suddenly Swami looks at her and says, why didn't you come and do the Sitaram Kalyanam? And she says, Swami, I don't have any of my accompanying artists. You know, I think they were supposed to come, and it happens that they don't turn up for the event.
Yes, they were supposed to have arrived, and... Swami has actually indicated to her previously that you should perform the Sita Rama Kalyanam. Perform in the sense, you know, they do it even now, you know, during the birthday times. I think it on the 18th of November, before the Rathotsavam, the Sita Rama Kalyanam is performed. Because I guess Sita Rama Kalyanam has a great inner meaning, right, Prem?
Right, and the lot of explanations which are given to that. One thing which is said is about, you know, that particular incident which Swami narrates, when Sita is trying to garland Rama and Rama does not bend, and Lakshmana comes and, you know, performs the Pad Namaskar to lift Lakshmana, Rama bends and Sita puts. You know, there is one significance about that, very, very profound. They say, it typically, Sita stands for Prakriti or nature, or the manifest part of the divine. And Rama stands for, you call him Atma Rama. You know, he's supposed to be the divinity itself. So then they say, Prakriti cannot reach out to God in its native state. So then they say Lakshmana is supposed to come and fall. And Lakshmana stands for Sukshma Buddhi. You know, that incident which Swami often says, that he points out, Rama and Lakshmana have a dialogue when Surpanaka comes to attack.
Okay.
And Swami, he just shows one finger and four finger, and he understands what Rama is asking him to do. So he actually stands for Sukshma Buddhi, or the intellect. So the essence of that is, for you to actually reach out to God, your intellect has to bow in front of the divine. Your reasoning should surrender itself to God. That is the first step. Then God will come down to lift your reasoning, and that is when you can actually merge with the divine.
What beautiful significance that is, you know, because we find this clash often happening, you know, when we go too much into reasoning, we just don't seem to be finding God or finding any meaning out of anything. We just are unable to understand God. That is why Swami often says, don't understand. Experience and enjoy. You know, I like this statement. It just occurred to me, and I often use it in different talks. The problem with us is we are irrationally rational. We are irrationally rational. And the solution for that is we have to be rationally irrational. Here and there, you know, because there are some things that are beyond us. We just have to accept that, and then, You know, that is what is meant by the intellect, or Lakshmana bowing to Rama. For some of our listeners who might be unaware of this story, which Swami narrates with great joy, possibly in one of the satsangs later on we will play Swami narrating the story. Swami says that Rama is an Ajanubahu, very tall person, and Sita is short. And when Sita has to get married to Rama, Rama is not even looking at her eyes or looking at her, because he says, till married I will not look at any woman, because every woman is like my mother. And so Rama is not ready to bend down, Sita is not able to reach up. What do we do? You know, it is typically the case, as Prem beautifully said, about a Prakriti or creation not being able to reach out to the Creator, and the Creator not ready to, you know, lower his standards. At that time, the intellect, when it surrenders, that is
actually
Lakshmana.
There is another small incident which happens before that. It seems again Rama looks at Lakshmana,
okay,
and signals to him. Swami says that Rama is actually indicating to Lakshmana to raise the ground.
Okay, yes, yes, yes. Swami narrates that, yes. Because he is Adishesha.
Adishesha, who is supposed to be the ruler of the netherworld. And so Swami, Rama, again, it's like a non-verbal communication, you know, looks at Lakshmana and asks him to raise. And Lakshmana also gives him a meaning look, which means that if I raise the ground, then you also go up.
Yes, so that is
again,
not a solution.
You know, the solution of intellect reaching out is not an option. It's
exactly
almost inner significance of that.
Intellect can never uplift you to the level of the Lord. And therefore, the only thing the Lakshmana, you know, knows he does that, he rushes and falls at Rama's feet. The intellect surrenders at the Lord, at the Lord's lotus feet. And that time, Rama himself bends to uplift the intellect, uplift Lakshmana. At that time, he's at a level where Sita can reach, and she quickly garlands. And as Swami says it, there's applause in the whole hall. Everybody is so thrilled with this beautiful narrative. And this Kalyanam, Rama Sita Kalyanam, is often narrated as symbolic of the union, the merger of Prakriti and Paramatma, the creator and the creation, the ultimate goal of every jiva, every life form. And it is no wonder that Swami, even from those days, has been giving a lot of importance to Sita Rama Kalyanam. In fact, this Kalyanam is performed like a wedding between Sita and Rama in temples even to this day. And as I said earlier, on the 18th of November, before the Rathotsavam, this is in order to awaken in everyone a desire that this is the ultimate goal of life and this is what I should achieve, ultimate merger with the Lord.
And as you said, no wonder how many times Swami has narrated this, how many times this event has happened. So that was the reason why, you know, when Prashanta Nilayam inauguration was happening, Swami wanted a Sitaram Kalyanam to be performed there.
And those artists were?
Right.
Had not come. Yes.
So she came and said, Swami, I wouldn't be able to perform because my accompanying artists have not come. And what does Swami do? Swami comes there and randomly from the crowd, he picks up one 20-year-old boy.
Okay.
And tells him something and asks him to go on the stage. Then again picks up another elderly middle-aged man and asks him to go up to the stage. And another young girl is also picked up. Now this is just from the gathering. And each one goes and takes his place next to his or her place. You know, one becomes the mridangam player, one becomes the violin player, and the other goes for the accompanying singer. They're supposed to be a following singer. And it is only later they find out that actually each one of them is an expert in that instrument.
Oh, the 25-year-old boy is
a proficient violinist.
The 45-year-old man is a proficient mridangam player.
And the girl is actually a playback singer.
Wow.
And that is how the performance goes by. The Harikatha is done. The Sitaram Kalyanam is done. And Swami also gets the Sitaram Kalyanam performed there, you know, with idols. As you said, we have the Ratotsavam, which actually has that Sitaram Kalyanam event happening. We had it even this year, the 18th of November every year that happens. And then again, Swami materialized a Mangal Sutra for that event, so that, you know, it could be tied around the idol of Sita. Interestingly, this was a very weird looking Mangal Sutra which Swami materializes. It's actually plain on both sides. There's nothing, no inscription, there is no image of Swami, or there is no image of Rama in it, or anything like that. It's like a typical Mangal Sutra which I think is used in marriages. So that was performed, and then after the marriage ceremony was over, Swami gives that Mangal Sutra to this Saraswati Bai, who's performed this thing, and Swami says, it's for you. And then Swami says, oh, there is nothing on the pendant. So Swami takes it back, holds it for a while and then gives it back. And when Swami gives it back to her, on one side there is an image of Swami, and on the other side there is an inscription saying that Saraswati Bai Harikatha in Prashantinilaya.
Wow. Made very, very memorable for her.
You know, just perfectly for that occasion.
You know, Prem, as you narrated this, two thoughts came to my mind, and, you know, possibly we can take a break after those. Maybe we can play that song, Sita Raman Kalyanam Chuddamurarandi, if we locate it in our archives. But in the meanwhile, you know, two thoughts that, as I said, that came to me. One was, it is not the first time that Swami has done this, you know. On an important event, Swami just comes and picks up some people to accompany an artist. Mm-hmm. And I have also seen that. I'm sure you also remember when for that the famous, world famous blues singer Dana Gillespie, mm-hmm. Swami would pick up a sitar player. Right. And that sitar player was, is nobody, none other than our colleague Sai Prakash from the studios. Dear listeners, you will hear him today during the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasam module. And like that, a tablist, a singer, you know, just randomly. And even I remember Begum Parveen Sultana, she stopped coming to Puttaparthi with her accompanying artists, because all the accompanying artists would be provided by Swami. So ever since, I mean, you know, as you narrated how Swami did it for Saraswati Bai, I just thought on numerous occasions Swami has done it for so many singers. And while that time Swami picked up rank strangers, this time he picked up students. Of course, for Swami, there's nobody like a rank stranger, because he is the indweller in every heart. Now, that is one incident that, well, that is one thought that came to my mind. The other thought was regarding the Sita Kalyanam.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, this, dear listeners, you can read about this in the Prashanti diary of Radio Sai, the entry for the date 2nd of March 2010. If I remember right, it was the festival of Holi, the festival of colors. And one of the reasons that is given for the celebration of Holi, there are several reasons from the mythology. And one of the reasons is, it is the date of the, it is the day of wedding of Rama and Sita, if I'm not wrong, if I'm not mistaken. And incidentally, or not incidentally, purposely, the state of Bihar and Jharkhand had actually planned a drama, a dance drama, which would culminate in the Sita Rama Kalyanam on the 2nd of March 2010. Swami was sitting on the dais and he was on the wheelchair and he was watching the entire program. And as he was watching the program, you know, in the middle, we had seen this, you know, once or twice Swami would want to visit the interview room, go to the interview room and come back, and sometimes he would get vibhuti packets to give or whatever, but Swami would make these trips to the interview room. So that day, during the program, Swami asked to be taken to the interview room, and he was wheeled into the interview room. And as he was wheeled into the interview room, the children, you know, were in a state of flux. They did not know whether they should proceed with the drama or the program, or should they stop. But they had no choice, because the CD, it was fully done on a CD, pre-recorded CD, and the CD kept playing from inside, so they had to continue. And the Sita Rama Kalyanam took place, you know. Janaka coming and bringing his daughter Sita, and it was done. It was hardly about 2 minutes, but yes, Rama picks up the bow, breaks it into half, and then he's wed to Sita. And that was supposed to be the final part of their presentation. After that, they all came together, a final song, and song got over. 1 minute later, Swami comes out of the interview room. Mm-hmm. He comes and he sees and he says, it was so beautiful, and I remember so vividly, because I was, by God's grace, sitting within earshot of what Swami was saying. And Swami says, oh, all have gathered for Sita Rama Kalyanam.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami was so happy just saying those words, you know, Sita Rama Kalyanam. And he says, okay, let the proceedings begin. The children were at total loss. They did not know what to do. What do you mean by proceedings begin?
Mm-hmm.
So Swami looked towards me. I went to him. Swami said, this is Sita Rama Kalyanam, right? Tell them to start. So I went, and I went to the one of the central, the heads of Bihar and Jharkhand state, and I told him, sir, I think Swami wants to watch the Sita Rama Kalyanam happening again, so please do it. Then he told me that the CD has to be played from inside, you know, we don't have the control here. So because the audio control used to be in the bhajan hall.
Right.
So I went to Swami and I said, Swami, the CD has to be played from inside, because, you know, it was all in front of Swami. I said, Swami, I'll just go and inform them to play the CD, then this will be done again. Swami said, no need of that CD, wait. So, what do we do? Then Swami tells, call Janaka. He tells, take your daughter and go back. So, he takes Sita and he goes back.
Mm-hmm.
It was towards one side. Swami gets the whole setup arranged in the center.
Okay.
And now, you know, there's usually that Agni, the flame, around which the wedding is, right. Ceremony is conducted. There was no wedding flame here. So Swami told to place the bow itself, the bow which Rama breaks, mm-hmm. in the center. It would function as the wedding flame. Then Swami said, okay, Rama enters from this side. So as Swami said, Rama entered. Swami said, now Sita should enter from this side with Janaka. Janaka escorting her. And Janaka was escorting her. And then Swami said, you know, Rama was wearing a dhoti and Sita was wearing a sari. So Swami said, now in order to show that they're symbolically wedded, his dhoti and her sari must be tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now who will do the tying, you know? Because according to the tradition, King Janaka should not tie. And, you know, I cannot tie because I am so out of place there. I am in my whites and this is the whole thing in costumes. So, Swami says an elder should tie. Now, who is the elder? Swami called that state president.
Okay.
Told him, go and tie that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, even as that was tying, you know, I remember Swami looked at the Vedam group and said, start chanting. The Veda chanting began. Oh my God, what a beautiful scene it was. The Veda chanting was going on. And then, you know, I'm getting goosebumps even as I'm narrating it. And the elder went and tied that. Now Swami said, now go around that bow.
Okay.
Because that was supposed to act as a fire. Go around it three times. You know, so Rama leading Sita, they walked around. And then Swami said, now all the elders must bless the couple. And so all the elders from the Bihar and Jharkhand state organization were called into that block in front of Swami and they, you know, offered their blessings. Then Swami said, now Rama and Sita should sit. They sat on the throne. Swami said, yes, this is so, Swami said, you know, chala santosham. It was almost as if when I see Rama, Sita Rama Kalyanam, I am so happy. It is almost as if when I see the Jivatma become one with the Paramatma, I am happy. Because true happiness is union with God. And in that happiness, Swami told the bhajan group, now start bhajans. And then he told me, get your camera. And Swami went. And you know, he was there with Rama and Sita. He didn't allow them to get up. He went and posed for pictures along with them. It was so beautiful. And that was the first time I was witnessing, you know, Swami's interest in the Sita Rama Kalyanam. And I am telling you, Swami was so completely involved in it. And he took on the role of everything, you know. The person who is conducting the marriage. The person who is getting married because Rama and Swami, Sai Rama. And finally, the person who is celebrating because it is a merger of the Jivatma with the Paramatma. An unforgettable day. Of course, dear listeners, the details are all there on the 2nd of March 2010 in Prashanti Diary. You can read it for yourselves. So Prem, you know, as you were narrating how Swami conducted the Sita Kalyanam in 1950, I was reminded of a Sita Kalyanam that Swami performed 60 years later in 2010. Unforgettable, and thank you for kindling those beautiful memories.
So I think a perfect way to end this narrative would be to play that song which Swami himself sang in Venkatgiri.
Oh.
Where Swami sang that Kalyanam Chutamurarandi.
The song says, come let us go and witness this holy union between Sita and Rama, because this is the union between the Jivatma and the Paramatma, and it one indeed requires the merit of thousands of lifetimes in order to witness a spectacle like this. Let's get inspired and get thrilled by this song.
వారలకు చాల పుణ్యమట పుణ్య పురుషులకు ధన్య భాగ్యమట భాగ్య భాగ్యమను భేదమి లేదట భక్తాలయముల ముక్తిదానమగు కళ్యాణము సూతమురారండి కౌసల్యాదనగుని కళ్యాణము సూతమురారండి అంబారి పై కలగు తేజమట ధగ ధగ మెరిసెటి దివ్య రాములట రామయంకమున రమణి సీతయట సీతారాముల సోదర సేవట చిరునవ్వున మన క్షేమ మటుకున్నట క్షేమమై అడిగిన మనకి కొదువా కదలరే కదలరే బదులికి పలుక వీణ తన్న మగు వింతన గార్లట పిల్లన గోవులు వేరి మృదంగ మురతములు గజములు తురగము మేనక వారి వెంట కొని బుద్ధ కౌచుకు కౌచుకు వెంటనే బుద్ధ దశరథులు దశరథు వెంటనే మంత్రి సమంతులు అత్యద్భుతముగా ఆనందముగా అయోధ్యయంతయు కదలి వచ్చినట కళ్యాణముదమునారండి అయోధ్యవాసుని కళ్యాణముదమునారండి అయోధ్యవాసుని కళ్యాణముదమునారండి అయోధ్యవాసుని కళ్యాణముదమునారండి అయోధ్యవాసుని కళ్యాణముదమునారండి అయోధ్యవాసుని కళ్యాణము.
So that was that beautiful song, and wow, that energy, and that really you could see Swami's excitement in singing that song. Wonderful. And that was a recording which was done in Venkatgiri. And talking of Venkatgiri, we've spoken about how the Raja of Venkatgiri came to Swami, I think it was in the late 1940s, 49.
49, yes, right. At Sakamma's house.
Right.
Coffee powder, coffee estate Sakamma's
exactly.
house in Bangalore.
And after that, the Raja himself comes when the construction of Prashanthi Nilayam is happening. And actually, this is a very important phase because a very, very important devotee has actually stepped into this narrative of Swami's life. 1950s was a time when Swami had a lot of engagement with this family of, the royal family of Venkatgiri.
Hmm.
Because Swami made a lot of trips to Venkatgiri. Lot of devotees, important devotees who came to Swami, like how many came to Swami through Swami's stay in Sakamma's house. Lot of devotees came to Swami through Swami's visits to Venkatgiri. We spoke about
B.V. Raman and Lakshmanan.
B.V. Raman and Lakshmanan who had a lot of engagement with Swami during those visits.
In fact, in this song, what we heard, Kalyanam Chudamararandi, right. The people who were following Swami were Raman and Lakshmanan.
And then Shri Tirumalachar.
He was a composer of the Satyasai Suprabhat.
Right. He was actually a poet in the royal court of Venkatgiri. And a lot of devotees came to Swami. A lot of foreigners also started visiting Swami when Swami was there. But to know what it was when Swami went to Venkatgiri, you know, what was the joy of these people who hosted Swami for so many days? I think we should play at least a small part of that interview which we had with Mr. Sairam Yachendra.
Exactly. You know, he happens to be the grandson of the Raja of Venkatagiri.
Okay.
And what he told was simply out of the world, so mind-blowing and beautiful in that 1.5 hour interview that we had with him. So possibly not the whole interview, but a part of the interview for the next 20-25 minutes maybe, it gives us a flavor. It gives us an idea of how life was when Swami visited Venkatagiri. And this is early 1950s, so it is close to our narrative range, and it is so beautiful to listen. So, dear listeners, we felt that it would not be complete without giving a flavor or taste of Venkatagiri before we conclude the Satyam Shyam Sundaram series temporarily. So, here it is. You can hear it directly from with the nectarine flow that Sairam Yachendra uncle has.
And first years, still my father and uncle, on Madan Gopal Krishna, he is the official photographer.
Hmm.
For all this, he has taken hundreds of photographs. And they used to say that once Swami built the Prashanthi Nilayam, I think his father and uncle, both of them, they said, Swami, not even 100 people are coming. Why did you make that huge bhajan hall? Then he laughs and said, idiots, you have to see me from the other side of Chitravati. They all said, Swami is simply, sort of joking with them. In a couple of years, the hall was full, people were waiting outside, and later on it became Shanti Vedika for all the festivals. Then of course Purna Chandra, very well, Hillview Stadium and beyond. All that. because half the people used to be from Vengirigiri. The first. And these things I should inform. Swami used to go in a palanquin. They used to carry him.
In Venkatagiri?
In Parthi.
In Parthi, huh?
Only four streets. And once, I don't want to name, but they drew a he-buffalo inside the crowd to disrupt
the procession,
disorganize, you know, and then take a little happiness out of that. And then one man called Damodar, he used to work for us. He's called Gada. His nickname, Gada, means like a pole. He's very tall and absolutely no way. I don't think he can even lift a dog for that matter. He's a huge buffalo. It started running. He just stepped up and held the horns of the buffalo, just pushed it. They said landed 30 feet. It's not hurt, but, you know, and then walked away.
Thirty feet.
It flew in the air. Swami was smiling all the time. You know where the strength came from. And the other incident is some other religion people, they wanted to do a bit of a galata with the ladies. I think they must have come from the surrounding area. Youngsters, misled fellows. When Swami went and told Swami, they were there waiting, small group of them, to disrupt again. This is another time. Palanquin Seva. And they say Swami has become sort of the Anjaneya, the Ugra Anjaneya.
Angry.
Some 20 feet Swami has, in front of everybody.
Grew in size.
In size. Many of them sort of fell unconscious, unable to bear the sight of Anjaneya, Swami in the form of Anjaneya. So looking at this, that's why from a distance, that's why I think he grew that high. They all ran. So immediately Swami has become very normal. The procession has taken place. This, they used to talk for months and months after that.
All these are in the 1940s?
1950s. Then the Annadhanam used to be there. I think in Prashantanilam itself, this my father recalls very vividly. A tremendous amount of clouds, very dark clouds, threatening with lightning, thunder and all that. So the, you know, what we call in Telugu, gadi poya, you know, the hearth.
Correct.
So if it rains, how to cook the food? They make a small hole and keep this thing on it.
Wood
and light the fire.
It get wet if it rains.
They went and told Bhagavan, going to rain heavily like this. Or they went and said, like this, he waved three times. Absolutely. And just round the Prashantinilayam, and probably Puttaparthi also, there was not a drop of rain. But beyond that, in fact, my father says, Chitravati was in spate. It was in floods. But Prashantinilayam, so, you know, when Swami does the Sankalpa, who can?
So all these are when Swami, they used to visit Puttaparthi. How would be...
This is all in Parthi.
Yeah. How would be Swami's schedule?
Swami
in Venkatagiri.
In Venkatagiri, I recall the moment, you know, the... I used to mistake it for the excitement because, you know, Swami, the Lord Himself, is coming. And by His grace, you sit next to Him and then He talks to you and you talk to Him and all that. But apart from this excitement, there used to be, now I, you know, sort of understand, there is some sort of a divine ananda inside. Only now, of late, when I recall all those moments, you know, something underlying this excitement, Swami is coming, Swami is coming. Oh, it's 6 months since I have seen Swami, Swami is coming here. There's something, it's like many of you would know, Swami would call, interview, and then you will take little time. Mm-hmm. You can hear Swami talking to somebody next to the door. And then you know Swami any time now. It's 1 second, 2 seconds, 2 minutes, is going to enter. Then how the flood of light and ananda comes in, you know. That characteristic smell of Bhagavan pervades. All this used to be there. Only now I understand, not in those days. And Swami is used to be, palace is a huge thing. So Swami, by His grace, one quarters was allotted to Bhagavan, rather He allots it for Himself. And then there's a bhajan hall and big halls. And one hall now is converted into a photo gallery. This Madan Gopal uncle has taken a lot of photographs. So year by year, he has put them on. 1951, 52, 53, Divine Life Conference, 55, 56, 60, 61, like that, you know, each. So that people will come and see all that. And that also, those days it used to be another adjacent bhajan hall. And then Swami, my father and uncle will sleep next to Bhagavan. Bhagavan sleep on the cot, they will sleep on the floor. And my father would say, 3-4 times he would get up and see what Swami is doing. Swami would be looking at the, you know, at the ceiling with the eyes open.
Not sleeping.
Not at all. And he asks, my father, I know you are trying to test me. You got up 3 times. And then they will go for their bath and all that. Swami, bathroom used to be right next, and the next to that is the dressing room. And then one side is a big hall where and Swami wants a table tennis table would be arranged. Swami sometimes would play the table tennis. That's the famous picture of Swami holding the
Correct.
Bat. That's right adjacent to Swami's bedroom. It's a huge hall. And then Swami will have, you know, brush and all that come, and he'll have his coffee. Those days, Swami used to drink coffee. And my grandmother will bring it, and she'll give it. And then Swami...
This will be around what time, uncle? Means what time Swami would get up about, like...
I think around, Swami, you know, never sleeps.
Correct,
so,
yeah.
You know, getting from the bed... I think probably 5:36. Those days, this Omkar, Nagar Sankirtan and all was not there. I mean, Suprabhatam and all. Subsequently, only Tirumalacharya wrote. He wrote it in Vengadiri, in fact. He's our Telugu teacher.
Oh, Tirumalacharya was your Telugu teacher?
Telugu teacher in the palace, before we went to school. Then it became Ramasharma Garu, from my 9th class to SLC, that is 11th, 9th, 10th and 11th. And then Swami will have his bath and all that. Only once in the dressing room you have the mirror on the, attached to the table. Once I have seen Swami only wearing the vesti. I still, it's like yesterday, and Swami, water droplets clinging on to the back. Swami standing in front and trying to comb his hair. And all the brushes made out of plastic will break. Swami's hair used to be so stiff. So finally they found out that the plastic is of no use, so they made it into a steel mesh brush, so that it won't break. And jokingly, you would ask, how is it, is my hairstyle?
So how was it? Was it like a halo or was it parted when he...
In the beginning days it is parted.
Okay.
That is, that I don't recall. I see Swami only the full, that I think for 54, 55 it became, you know, the divine all around his...
So that day when you saw him, he had come fresh from his bath.
That is, I think, with the halo. I must be in my seventh year, eight years.
He had a good physique, right, Swami?
Oh, Swami's shoulders are like wrestler's shoulders. Very strong, very broad. So Swami walks, you know, like Devi sometimes. He becomes a Devi. But, you know, shoulders, my father used to massage Swami. So that is absolutely like a wrestler, very strong, very well defined, you know. And then my grandmother will say, grandfather will all come, Swami, it's already 7:30, 8 o'clock, breakfast, I have to keep on telling him, then he would consent. Then he would sit on the mat, on the floor, with the mat on top of that, in the dressing room, one side of the dressing room, where the breakfast is served. And the Swami used to like one dosa with the holes in it.
Set dosa.
Set dosa. With the, what's the, groundnut chutney.
Okay.
And that especially, it used to be made by one Challamma. You know, what a great soul she is. Swami would ask for that.
She was a cook?
No, she was our distant relative, living in some other house. So she will bring it to Swami. That I have seen many times. You all must have seen. Swami puts his fingers at the lunch or dinner and then mixes. And you would think that the hand, he will hold it, the morsel. So we assume psychologically that Swami would put it in his mouth. When he brings it to the mouth again, he'll put it back. So eat very little, even in those days. Very little.
And how come
you're
such a good...
So it is basically for our satisfaction, so many things are, you know, this thing, 10 dishes are kept and all that.
But you said he had such a strong body.
The elements get from him, once he said. Absolutely right, you know. Like that. Then he'll come to the bedroom. Then he'll sit in a chair, a standard chair. And then he'll have his coffee and the betel leaves. And one, the chunnam we call it. In Telugu we call it
chunnam. Yes.
That used to be pink in color, very strangely. I think it used to be get from Madras, from some company. Swami would do it himself. And then Swami would say, talk, whatever you want, ask something. So that is the gala time starting. Not much philosophical explanations, anything, but it's basically, it's a Swami making you laugh, laugh and laugh. Nobody would believe, people who have seen in the 2001, 2002, 3 and all that, Swami when he was in the early days, it's a continuous laughter. Continuous. I think many of the boys also know about this. In, they say Bundavan, it is like that. Continuous laughter. And I'll give you an example. Once, then he would narrate many stories. And he said once he went to I think Karnataka someplace, and then he spoke in Kannada. And Swami says, I spoke in a very mellifluous musical Kannada. People were thrilled. Then you know what? So my father immediately said, no, Swami. Then he said, you know, that is Lingayat area. Where you are not supposed to even say the Vishnu's names or anything.
Hari name,
Only Hara. You know, they all wear, I think, not very sure, you see, that. And then after they are very happy, I started in Kannada, they're all thrilled. And you know what I did? No, Swami. Then he said, I started Govinda Krishna Ji.
Okay.
Not realizing it is Govinda, they are taken by Bhagavan's, you know, the divine personality, they all sang, go. go, Krishna ji. And we all, the way he said it, you know, I mean, we all fell down laughing. Swami himself, with his legs down on the cot, he was sitting on his cot. He fell down and laughed. And then the final part of it is, before they realized, they said something which they are not supposed to say, a proscribed word, Govinda. Swami got into the car and drove off. As though that made us even more laugh, you know, the way he said it, I had to come out. I mean, for a minute he'll make you forget he's the divine, that everything is in his hands, but he says as though he's escaping, running away. Like that, these are the... And then... Bhajan is normally at 11 o'clock, not exactly at 11, maybe a bit early, a bit late and things like that. So he'll send us to get the Bhajan group ready so that they will all come.
So in Bhajan group you said it was Ram Lakshman.
Ram Lakshman and later on B.V. Raja Reddy and the local Bhajandar group. All that. So sometimes we have the Saptatantri Seturamaya. I used to play violin with this 7 strings. So that's why it's called Saptatantri. And I think he came to Parthi also many times. So, and Muruga Bhupati, if I remember right, he's also a very famous Carnatic musician. He's Mrudangam and all that. They'll all assemble and then they say Swami would say start. You know, the Ganesh Bhajan will start and then Swami will come. And Swami used to sit on a thick mattress of 1 foot, almost, and one round pillow-like thing would be kept. I don't know what you call it in Hindi, in Telugu also.
Pillow for putting his foot on?
No, for Swami to lean on at one part of the, you will, like this, it will be, because there is no wall. Swami is always...
A cylindrical pillow.
Cylindrical pillow. Swami would sometimes sit like, mostly would sit like this. And that is, that thick mattress is covered by the Varanasi Zari Sari, golden sari.
Silk sari.
Silk sari. Swami would sit and, you know, there are no timings. It goes as long as Bhagavan wishes.
Approximately like 12:30?
12:30 also. Sometimes, it's those days, it used to be one kirtan, one bhajan. B.V. Raman, Lakshman, they sing one kirtan and then Raja Reddy will sing one bhajan. So, it's sort of an alternative.
And you had mic system or it is?
No mics, nothing. No. That's the time the recordings were made with the Grundig spool, you know, tape recorder, you know, huge spools with one mic only. And this goes on and then Harati is taken. Those days, it used to be Pavana Purusha Sai. It's a Kannada Harati song. Little later on it became...
What are the wordings, Uncle, maybe if you can...
Shankara Rupa, I remember.
Okay, huh?
Then it became for some time, in the mornings it used to be Shankara Rupa. In the evenings, Pavana Purusha, Sita Jana Kava, Sarvesha and all that. And then this is another very beautiful, Shankara Rupa, Sajjana Vandita. Sai Rama Namostute Nirvikara Nirupama Charita Sai Rama Namostute. Like that, I think 4 or 5 charanams, verses are there. And then...
So it was not Om Jai Jagadisha Hari?
No, not at all. Everybody, sometimes he would give interviews in the bhajan room. There is a
Was there any priest or somebody who would give arati, or who used to give the arati?
One Gopalaya. Priest, he would do the to Swami first and then mostly the Swami's photographs, very rare photographs. Swami sitting on that lion skin, must have seen.
A meditative pose, yes.
That and Shirdi Baba sitting on a stone, you know, very early photos of all those things. And of course, Rama, Krishna, all that will be there. And then Swami sometimes would call, you know, devotees for an interview also there. And Swami used to go to every house, devotee's house.
In Venkatagiri?
In Venkatagiri. And the funny thing is, my father and uncle would go up to the entrance of the house, because being rajas and all that, they won't enter inside the house. So Bhagavan himself going, the Chakravarti of the Chakravartis.
Because the caste system?
Not caste system. They are working for us, so we shouldn't enter their houses, sort of, you know, the superiority complex. Bhagavan himself goes, and he goes to one Gurunadam teacher house, and he said, I want to teach something. They had absolutely no money. Swami manifests a 100 rupee note. He rushes outside, gets something for Bhagavan to eat, most probably fruits, and offers to Swami. Swami eats. So many houses Swami went. I remember many of them are all still devotees of Bhagavan, of course. So all that. And there's a story also, I think, when father went, Tirumalacharya has gone to his native place, I think somewhere near Palamaner, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around that area. So he comes next day in a horse-drawn tonga from station. He's going to his house, and Swami says Namalabha is coming. Because he used to put very prominent
Namam.
And then Swami, all these people who are listening couldn't follow what Swami is referring to. And then Swami, next day he comes, he's a Ramakrishna devotee. Even in those days, he was, when meditating, he used to levitate.
So Tirumalacharya.
Tirumalacharya. So the first instance it has become, he has accepted Bhagavan as Bhagavan straight away, you know. And then of course Suprabhatam came much later. He wrote Suprabhatam. And Swami will go for lunch, and as usual eats very little, and he'll ask all the children to take namaskar, go and come at 4:30, 5 o'clock. So we do the full namaskar in the, when we came around 8 o'clock, we have a namaskar, and going back, we have a namaskar. In the afternoon, we come around 4:35, we'll have a namaskar. After dinner, Swami would ask us, you know, it's already time, 8:39, you go back, come tomorrow. And then, you know.
From then to 4:30, Swami would take rest afternoon?
For about 1 hour, 1.5 hours. That's the time. All these devotees will come and sit, the senior devotees, Tirumalacharya, I think, you know, sometimes. Sometimes Swami just relaxes there.
You spoke about one incident where, you know, Swami from his toe he had manifested vibhuti.
This is from Swami's bedroom to the bhajan hall, it's about 100 meters. In the middle you have 3 steps, and then he has to climb, go to the bhajan hall. While coming back to Bhagavan's bedroom, he had to climb down. So after the bhajan, Swami, in the middle step, he went into a trance. So those days, you know, I think it's my father and my uncle who held Swami, and slowly, you're not supposed to touch him and shift his positions and things like that. Those very strict instructions.
When he goes into trance.
Into a trance. So you have to wait till Swami comes back. I think suddenly his right toe, left toe, I'm still under, you know, which it split open, and nearly 60, 70 kgs of pink vibhuti has come. Like water comes from a water hose, so fast and furious. And in the vibhuti, there were some diamonds. Swami said, distribute to all.
including diamonds.
So whoever gets it in that, you know, his praptam, he'll get it. So this is another very great incident happened, but till now we don't know why Swami did it.
You said 60 kilograms of it.
Swami's 5'2", 5'3" body. Pink vibhuti, that too, maybe from Kailash.
This was also in 1950s?
50s. Because by 60s, Swami started giving discourses in the evenings, and he will take us to the outings, and like the picnics. You know, I remember many of them. Very funny incident is that with the Peace Corps volunteer, one American came, his name is Stanley Terrell. He also came just to, I think, see the fun probably. So Swami, after, you know, enchanting all of us with his divinity, Swami said, looked at him and said, I was also present. I remember this. He said, what do you want? I think, I don't think he has understood, not that we understood also, but not even little we have, that also he didn't have. So, I think kidding, he told Swami, I want Mercedes. Swami nodded his head. And his two group members in that Peace Corps, which stayed in Vengadiri for 1 year, 2 years or something, they visited 2 years back, so I was asking how Stanley, when they visited our house, I asked, how Stanley, do you remember the incident? Swami said, asked him, what do you want? He replied, I want Mercedes. And they were stunned. They forgot this incident. Then only my words, I think,
triggered,
made
them
triggered, and they recollected. Yes, yes. And they said, do you know something? He said his wife's name is Mercedes.
Oh,
he went back to US and married a lady called Mercedes. So, can you imagine? What he casually asked, and he wanted something, and Swami gave it to him. So asking something casually with Bhagavan is
not advisable.
No, no, no. Never. You had it.
This was during a picnic.
It's called Isuka Tota. That means, you know, garden of sand. Next to it, there's another picnic, Jinkala Bavi. There, this is another very rare miracle Swami has done. Sri Ramachandra Murti came from the sky. Instead of, you know, all that landing or Swami making a heap of sand and something coming out of that, which is normal. You see we saw the light coming from the sky, and it landed in with a sound of, you know, gala 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 sound. So everybody is wondering, the first time, even people like my father, uncle, all that they have seen like this, and it came into Bhagavan's hand, that is Sri Rama Vigram. From the sky it came down.
Jinkala Bavi.
Jinkala Bavi. Jinka means
deer.
This is also another very famous incident, and that is still kept in the
Pujara. The idol.
And then he gave many idols like that for worship. And another incident, while Swami was this is in Prashantanilayam, while very strangely this is not recorded, neither in Satyam Sivam Sundaram nor in any of the books on Bhagavan, this is exactly what happened to Siddhi Baba. Siddhi Baba left the body for 3 days, you know, Mahalsapadis and all that. Swami left the body here in Prashantanilayam when Prashantanilayam is under construction. Mandir is under construction, not finished.
So it must have been 1950s.
Yes,
early.
Yes. Late 50s.
Late 50s.
And only B.V. Raman was there present.
The singer.
So, singer. So, we had to lock Swami's keeping Bhagavan's body in a room. I think in Swami's bedroom. And locked it. And we had to go to Pinukonda so that he will send telegrams.
To doctors?
To all the devotees. Because Swami is gone.
Oh.
He started trance.
Oh, there's no breath.
Yeah. No life sign at all. So by the time, you know, the telegram, he went, ran literally, got a cart and all sorts of things, reached Pinukonda, sent to the Kuppam people, to Vengadiri people, few people in Bangalore, some people in Chennai and all that. He sent telegrams. He came back. Like Mahalsapati was sitting guard to Swami's body. But I think second day or third day, Swami came back into life. By the time my people and all reached, Swami was sitting on a heap of sand. Okay. They all rushed in front of Mandir. They all rushed to Swami and said, no, no, it's all right. And my father and my uncle and all, they say, certainly from that day onwards, Swami's fame spread the entire India first and then the universe. And of course, Swami never said why, what, how or anything.
But that was like some landmark.
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
शिरडीपुरीश्वर साईं शंकर परतिपुरीश्वर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर
गिरिधर गोपाला गोपाला गिरिधर गोपाला गोपाला
साईं गोपाला शिरडी गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
परती गोपाला साईं गोपाला
साईं गोपाला साईं गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरधर गोपाला गोपाला
शिरडीपुरीश्वर साईं शंकर परतिपुरीश्वर साईं शंकर शिरडीपुरीश्वर साईं शंकर परतिपुरीश्वर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर साईं शंकर
गिरिधर गोपाला गोपाला
गिरिधर गोपाला
गोपाला
साईं
Gopala, Sai Gopala,
Sai Gopala, Sai Gopala,
Sai Gopala, Sai Gopala,
Sai Gopala, Sai Gopala,
Giridhar Gopala, Gopala,
Giridhar Gopala, Gopala, Giridhar Gopala, Gopala, Giridhar Gopala,
Gopala.
So that, dear listeners, was the conversation we had with Mr. Sairam Yachendra. You know, it only comes to show there's one point which he made in that which, you know, really sets me thinking. He said many of these incidents which he was narrating, actually he did not feel the beauty of those incidents when it was actually happening. But today when he recollects, when he thinks back, he says that the bliss which it gives me now, and even as he was saying that the way he was choking and he was not able to proceed, It brings the importance of treasuring even the little things which are associated with Swami, which we are going through in our life, isn't it?
Exactly, Prem. Because, you know, Swami has always emphasized on the fact, on the truth that more than the chances that are given, it is the pining for those chances and the way you treasure those chances that is more important. And therefore, you know, dear listener, Satyam Shyam Sundaram is not a story that is completed, say, in 2011 with the Mahasamadhi of Bhagwan. Because Satyam Shyam Sundaram has always been written in parts. Part 1 has a flavor, part 2 has a different flavor, part 3 has a different flavor, because each phase, each stage of Swami's avatar is so different. And so this post-2011 is another new part of Satyam Shyam Sundaram that is being written every moment as we breathe in. And therefore, it becomes so very important that we give that importance to those magical moments that Swami is bringing into our lives, and we put in those efforts to record them, maybe photograph them if possible, or audio record them, or write them down, because we never know how the story builds up to, how the linkages come in, and when the linkages actually come in, let us not miss them because we forgot to record them.
And even that beautiful Mercedes story which he shared, you know, just to think of it, let us say Lord Rama was the king, and just as we were saying how many people have performed in front of Swami, there would have been millions of people, singers and musicians who would have performed in Lord Rama's presence. I don't think we know even one of their names, but we know of Tyagaraja, who came so many millennia later, and because he gave importance to Lord Rama, he gave his entire life to Rama, we remember him and his poetry even today, and we have heard Swami himself sing his poetry. You know, what greater validation for a devotee than that? You know, that itself shows it is not what aspect of Swami's life you have had a chance to take a bite of. It is like how much of your life you have been able to give to God and how much importance you've been able to give Swami in your life.
Take that Mercedes example that you said, Prem. You know, Sairam uncle was saying that he remembered it and asked, which means the actual seeker of the Mercedes had forgotten about that episode and he was refreshed in his memory by what he asked. Just imagine if Sairam uncle too had forgotten that episode, and then this beautiful Leela of Bhagwan would be lost forever. So any casual statement in the physical form, in a dream, in a vision, nothing is to be, you know, written off lightly. At the same time, don't interpret it in the way you feel is right. Imagine at the same Mercedes example, if one had thought that years later this guy will be driving a Mercedes car, how wrong would he have been in his interpretation? So, the one who gives indications is Swami. The one who gives dreams, visions and the inspiration is Swami. And the one who will make us understand when the time is right is also Swami. So, let us make effort just to be true and honest in our recording. Not bothering too much about what does it actually mean, does it mean this. That is not left to us, because when the time is right for us to understand, Swami will make us understand. As of now, let us just focus on recording and treasuring these experiences, these different ways in which Swami blesses us, so that if not us, at least the future generation will be able to relive this and see a connection if it exists by then and enjoy it.
And Swami was once talking about the mind, you know, that's when he said, there is nothing you can do about the choices you make, or there's nothing about you can do about your emotions, because they're all vasanas, Swami says, because they've been built over so many births. You know, then the question comes, then you cannot do anything in your life. You cannot make any changes in your life. If you want to lead a nobler life, you want to be a peaceful person, you want to be a person of good temper, nothing can be possible. Swami says the only starting point which you may have a control in the least is to seek satsangam. It's to seek the company of the good. And then Swami says, Sat is only God. And to keep thinking about God, to keep reading about God, to keep yourself in the company of God. I think this Satyam Shivam Sundaram, or the life of Swami, of the life of any divine personage, of Shirdi Baba, of Rama, of Krishna, I think the joy of keeping your mind occupied with their stories is the first starting point for achieving any spiritual great. And that is why Shravanam is the first point, the first step in leading to Atmanivedanam.
So dear listeners, with the fond hope that you have enjoyed this 1 year series that we have been blessed and privileged to be part of, this, with this we will bring the temporary curtains down on the Satyam Shivam Sundaram. But before we do that, just one final little story, Prem. You know, I remember reading the story in my third grade in the moral science textbook.
Mm-hmm.
In that, there's a story of this man, old man, who is digging in his garden, planting mango saplings. And somebody comes and says, old man, what is it that you're doing? He says, I'm planting mango saplings. He says, for what? He says, when they grow, they will give juicy mangoes, and it is for that reason that I am planting them. And the person asking the question laughs at him, saying that, you know, you are so old now, you cannot be assured that you will be there to enjoy the fruits of this mango tree when it yields them actually. And the old man just smiles back and says, young man, throughout my life I have had many, many mangoes. None of them were from the trees that I planted. They were planted by somebody else. If everyone had thought like this, I would never have enjoyed mangoes. It doesn't matter who enjoys the mangoes. I am just assured that somebody will enjoy the mangoes, and therefore I am planting the trees. It is with this kind of feeling I think we should treasure our experiences with Swami. We may think that what is the use? It doesn't make sense now. Swami gave me a vision. It is like this, but it doesn't make sense now. How do I benefit from this? Till now we have benefited so much from different people sharing their experiences, which makes sense to us now. When Swami said that, you know, there'll be 1 lakh people here, imagine if people had not recorded Swami saying that and putting it down. Because at that time it felt so nonsensical. How could it ever happen? How could people be there till the Chitravati? That was preposterous. But then it came true, and today, looking back at what Swami said then and seeing how it is today, we are able to appreciate. Though the people who actually heard it are no longer physically alive to enjoy it. In the same way, experiences that we get in our lives, when we record them sincerely and honestly, the future generation too will enjoy those sweet fruits, just like we have enjoyed the fruits of the previous generation. I think that should be an inspiration for us also to record and become part of the Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
So dear listeners, on that note, we bring this satsang to a close, and as Arvind was saying, temporarily bring the Satyam Shivam Sundaram series to a close. But of course, we cannot speak of anything here but Swami, and whatever we do here is Satyam Shivam Sundaram, the life and the message of Swami.
We will package the same in a new heading, right. A new title.
So we seek Swami's blessings and guidance to what we have to take in the future episodes to come. And of course, you could be the instrument through which Swami decides to tell us what to do. And if you have any suggestions, you can always write to listener@radiosai.org. If you have any suggestions, you can pass it on to us. We offer this episode and all the episodes we've done on Swami's life and Swami's lotus feet, and with gratitude-filled hearts, thank him for this opportunity and seek his blessings. In a short while from now, we'll have the Love to Love segment. We'll meet you next week, 12:30 on Afternoon Satsang on Thursday Live. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.